All right. Welcome to another thrilling episode of Truth and Reconciliation. It's the Pellwood Fantasy Football League podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It is great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
Doing good. Another good week in the league. Another good week for my team, so I can't complain. Happy to be here. Mm-hmm. Happy to be headed into week five and enjoying the interleague play that we have going on in the league between the challengers and incumbents divisions.
I'm all for the squish factor, and we had a great week for last week. I think, and I'm curious to know what your read is on, I think we're still below average in our points scored. Maybe we're regressing a little bit back to the mean, but it was a great week four with several heartbreaking beats, but lots of tension in the fandom of the game this past week, and a couple of big matchups this week in terms of a few kind of dreading 1-4 risks this week. So lots going on. Pete, how are you feeling right now?
Last week wasn't as low scoring as week two was, but it still would have been the second lowest scoring of the week mm-hmm. from the regular season last year. So pretty low scoring week last week, which led to some closer matchups, which was fun. We had, you know, Derek holding on to his perfect record by a fraction of points, mm-hmm. a 0.2 point win over Ben. And then you and Charles were in a close matchup that went down to the wire. Michael and Chris also had a very tight battle as well. And then Brock had a very close and narrow victory for the highest points scored on the week as his defense scored like 19 points on Monday night to give him the win there. So that was a kind of a bizarre turn to the end of the week, but it was a great way to end it. It was a nice surprise.
For sure. Well, I'm excited to dive into matchup talk, but I do have a question for you. As our commish, you've made some commentary about the incumbent versus the challengers divisions and those matchups in the midst of our schedule. And you dropped some stats in the GroupMe earlier today, I believe, or was it this week, that may have ruffled some feathers. What trends were you trying to point out? Really, what's the takeaway that we should have based on your analysis?
It's an interesting point. It's an interesting fact. It's, you know, provided with no other commentary. But in
right, I'm asking for week the commentary
one,
right now.
Week one of interleague play, the challengers went the incumbents went 4-2 against challengers. In week two, the incumbents went 5-1 against the challengers. And it's really just interesting to me because we saw this happen last year as well, where the teams in the incumbents division had a better record over the challengers division because of their performance when the two divisions were against each other. So who knows what will happen this year? It could turn around. It could be one of those things where I speak it and then it immediately reverses because I'm pointing out an outlier fact, and then it, you know, things, you know, come back to more normal and it looks like I jinxed it, but I didn't really. It's just the way, you know, the law of averages work. But yeah, I thought it was worth pointing out as I looked at the standings. You've got Derek sitting at 4-0 in the incumbents division. Then you've got both you and Jared at 3-1 in the incumbents division. And the top team in the challengers is now 2-2. So I'm just, you know, the commentary would be, let's go challengers, step it up.
I think that's fair enough. Now, you pointed out something else in the group, me, a clarifier as to the power of our podcast jinx. You gave it some legs and really defined it really clearly. Would you like to restate what it is that our podcast empirically has the power to do?
It's similar to the Madden cover curse, right, or the SI cover curse. It's right, like when you did the best player on the cover of SI or of Madden, inevitably, they're like at the peak of their game. Mm. They're gonna decline after that mm-hmm. because unless they're Michael Jordan or, you know, Tiger Woods in his prime, they're just like, you can't stay at the peak forever. You can't be on the Madden curse or on the Madden cover forever. So it looks like a curse. It's not really a curse. It's just things returning back to normal. But we did have Charles on after he was 2-0 with two top scores, and he immediately stumbles in week three, and all his players get hurt, and he loses again in week four. So it looks really bad. The curse isn't necessarily real. regression
we can't
to
say
the mean
for
is
fact
real.
It is. But right, we also can't deny with 100% accuracy.
Curses aren't real. Regression to the mean is real.
Well, risking the curse tonight and joining us live on the air is none other than Mr. Garland Ganker himself, Jared. Jared, welcome to the show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, but I think because of the topic that y'all have just been discussing, my reaction should be...
Wow, you're really up in my podcast game. I thought I had my guest.
Exactly.
Dang. Well,
yeah, that should be my reaction. It's not going to be my reaction. I'm excited to be here and excited to hang out and have fun with y'all for a little while.
Well, we're glad to have you here. So far, you, sir, are doing pretty good in your fantasy run. You're sitting at 3-1, and you look pretty strong for this week 5 up ahead. You currently have a total of 609.2 points for. Now, we are finished with the Thursday night game, but as of right now, you are in the first place for points for. Congratulations, sir. You're actually sitting impressively at number 4 for points again. So your record of 3-1 is a really, really strong one. And as of this week, you're being double cursed. And maybe that was part of your plan, as Peter puts you at the top of the power rankings in addition to being on the podcast. So maybe you're going for like the double negative here as you hit week 5. Is that how it works, Kamish?
Yeah, actually, I was thinking that was pretty wise of Jared to accept the invite to the podcast right at the same time as hitting the number 1 rank in power rankings, because I think there is, two negatives equals a positive situation going on. But also, we had Jared ranked very highly coming out of the draft.
Sure did.
And, you know, he faltered at first with a loss in week 1. He dropped down to number 9 in the power rankings after week 1. And now he's climbed his way back to the top. So I think the regression back to the mean has already happened for Jared, and this is just like where his team was always meant to be. I had him as my number 2 team coming out of the draft, and now he was number 2 last week, number 1 this week. So I think he's right where he was supposed to be all along.
Okay.
Well, I have some commentary on this. One, I'm gonna go back to it for those that don't read the emails. You have absolutely wronged Derek. Derek beat me. He beat me in week 1, so not only is he 4-0, but he has beaten me, and therefore I just don't understand how he cannot be the number 1 overall power-ranked team. There is that. My other thought is...
He beat you by 4 points, by the way.
I know. Nope. And that leads us into the second point that I need to make tonight, and that is he beat me because my position player of the most important position in fantasy football, especially PPR fantasy football, is the kicker. The kicker is the most important position, and I am currently sitting with the second fewest kicker points in the entire league. I had 4 points that week from my kicker, and I'm at 15 for the year to date. And that's just unacceptable. Unacceptable for my kicker.
How can you say it's the most important position when you are leading the lead in points scored? You're the number 1 in power rankings, and you have the such a small amount of points from your kicker. How is it the most important
Retweet.
Position?
I'm somehow winning despite this terrible performance.
Because kickers
the most
don't matter.
Important position. No, kickers clearly matter. Defenses don't matter. Kickers matter.
I'm gonna offer
this is
a contrarian.
Fate
That's exactly what's happening here. He came on locked and loaded onto our show, ready to fake self-deprecate and reverse pander.
No,
how
I,
dare
actually,
you, sir?
I did do some kicker research from our league from the year. I don't actually think kicker is the most important position. I am looking forward to having Greg Zuerlein as my kicker following the Rams week 9 bye, much like he did last year. I expect Chris Windsor to drop Zuerlein. I will then pick Zuerlein up. Windsor will think he's going to get him through till he can pick him up after the bye. This is not going to happen. Hmm. Yeah.
Tell you what, I have a perfect solution for you. This is just like a matchmaking show, right? This is like, Bachelor number three coming out behind the curtain here.
Perfect.
Trade Russell Wilson to Windsor.
Beautiful.
For Zuerlein. It solves your kicker problems. It solves his quarterback problems, and everyone can be happy.
It's beautiful. Then.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
If kicker's so important to you, I think that's the move you have to make.
Clearly. I did want to say it is funny because Andy's bit with the kicker is that he hates when kickers are drafted early, right?
Right.
And
period.
And yeah, just period. He hates it. Now, and Andy does not partake in the drafting kickers early.
On principle.
Andy currently has the second most kicker points in the league, despite taking his kicker kind of late in the draft, which is impressive.
It's as if he knows something we don't.
The other top six kicker points in the league were all drafted in the first 100 picks, and Andy is the only one with a sub 100 or after 100 kicker. So anyway, yeah, this is your kicker news for the week.
Boy, I'm glad we only get it on to talk about kickers.
You only get it once all year. I'm sure I won't be back after this.
Oh, yeah, I think that's more than we can handle.
Hang on. Wake me up when he's done monologuing.
I'm done.
Oh, my gosh. By the way, you have just undone your double negative by bringing the triple jinx of kicker focus pandering fodder to the show.
We know fake humility backfires. It has to be genuine. Heart of hearts, guys. It has to be from the heart of
hearts. Well, pot meat kettle. Well, Jared, congratulations on your current 3-1 standing. I've given all of our guests the opportunity before we dive into their matchup for the week, the chance just to look back at the draft to add any opinion or observation coming out of our draft, whether it's on your team or the league overall. Do you have any?
Let me ask you a pointed question because we wanted to have you on last week, but you claimed you were sick or something, so you didn't come on last week. Because last week you topped 200 points. In week three you topped 200 points, and so I want to talk to you about that. And a big reason why you hit 200 points that week was because you had Keenan Allen and Mike Evans, who both went off, in the same week. And I remember when you drafted Allen and Evans, I thought you took them. I think you spent more on them than I expected you to. Where you spent 45 on Keenan Allen and 54 on Mike Evans, and I know you kept James Conner for zero, so you had money to spend. But I was wondering, were Keenan Allen and Mike Evans specific targets of yours going into the draft, or were those kind of the top wideouts left for you when you needed to pick up some top wideouts with your dollars?
Yeah, actually, it's really neither, and I've heard from different league members both of those theories about those two players and connection with me. Really, I felt like they were being undervalued by the rest of the league. I felt like they were going for too cheap. I had Mike Evans kind of as the last receiver in my tier one of receivers. I don't remember where the next to lowest went. I'd have to pull that up, but I had Mike Evans as the tier one, and I had Keenan Allen as kind of the top right there with Amari Cooper of my tier two. So I thought Amari Cooper went for way too cheap. Did he go for 29? I don't remember for sure, but 29, 39, whatever it
36.
Was. 36. Okay. So it was he was a steal. He was an absolute steal. And I regretted not spending a little more on him. They weren't targets of mine. I expected them to be valued a lot higher than they were.
Interesting. Did you have specific targets coming into the draft of, or a specific kind of team build you had in mind? You had with Connor locked in as your first running back for zero, you kind of had the freedom to do whatever you wanted from that point.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to get three studs, and I had hoped that they would go for a little bit cheaper. Charles kind of changed some of that. I thought Charles had a great beginning of the draft. His team's pretty good. Really, as great as the beginning of Charles' draft was, the middle of his draft is what really made his team, because you can have that, you can get those studs, and then if you put true duds around them, your team's going to go nowhere. But with drafting James White, James White's a very, very serviceable player. Sammy Watkins was in a great spot. I always like Fitz. I like Fitz every year. He just is ageless. And Jarvis Landry, I didn't love at the time, but there's room for him in that Cleveland offense. So he put some good receivers around those running backs that he drafted, and he kind of messed up my – I was hoping to get Saquon or CMC. Well, I guess, was CMC kept? I don't even remember now. I think so.
CMC was kept.
So, yeah, I was hoping to get Saquon, David Johnson, Zeke, one of them. And I guess I did get David Johnson, but he was kind of the lower end of that list for me. So I was going to come in and get some studs. What's the plan?
Well, according to my research, you did, and your values were strongest in the running back position. I agree with Pete. I had you at -$29 of value on your wides. Hindsight, obviously, erasing some of that concept. And negative or positive 20 on your running backs. You, I believe, were the first. I'm actually going to confirm this. I think you were the first of the teams. Let's see here. It looks like you and Ben both in round or picks 5 of one another. I don't remember who was first, but y'all were the first two to pick up defenses. So you went with your keeper, your three big positions up top, and then you snagged your defense up front. So this would tell me that, contrary to your earlier opinion, considering you got kicker as your 6th pick, that defense may be more important to you.
That was a targeted pick. The Cowboys had kind of a weak schedule they were facing early on, with Miami at the tail end of that, who's been even worse than we thought they were going to be. So I wanted them for the first 3 weeks of the season, and then I have a defense right now. I think it's the Panthers. I'm honestly not sure who I have. So that might reaffirm my theory that defense isn't the most important. I'm not even sure which one I have rostered right now.
So pompous. Don't even know who your defense is. Just like, I can put anyone out there. I'm going to win. It doesn't matter.
At this juncture, who would you say is just the most, your most favorite non-kept pick? And who is your most disappointing pick from the draft?
It's a great question. I'm going to say my most disappointing. The end of my draft was poor. I didn't. My $1 players did not wind up being great picks. But so that's my answer. I'll say my kicker, honestly, since it's the most important position, and I picked so early, and I have such a terrible score. Clearly, that's my most disappointing pick. My favorite pick, my best pick, honestly, I think it has to be Keenan Allen for 45, and he's the number one receiver so far this year. And with the injuries they've had there, that's certainly worked in my favor. But he's so far exceeded expectations. And then number two would be Austin Hooper. I really wanted Vance McDonald. I was bummed I didn't get Vance McDonald. Didn't want to overpay for him, but I really thought he would have a good year, and he just hasn't. So I honestly lucked into Austin Hooper for $2. He was my insurance on Vance McDonald, and I kind of had him targeted after the kind of the tight ends I wanted were gone, and he's been just exceptional this year. He's probably overperformed what he's going to do for most of the year, but I think he's going to continue to be all right for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I owe you an apology on Austin Hooper and on your rankings, on your post-draft rankings. If I had known Austin Hooper was going to be the number two overall tight end through 4 weeks, I would have definitely had you as the number one team. I remember talking about your team after the draft. I was like, I don't like this tight end. Like, that's the one hole. Tight end is the only hole, and now I mean, that he's been so good, and he only has two touchdowns. It's not like it's just all, you know, positive touchdown variance that's helping him do so well. He's, you know, catching, you know, 6-7 balls on average per game. So I've been really surprised with how involved he's been in the offense. You know, whether they're winning or losing, he's been, you know, out there catching passes for Atlanta. So very impressive there. You have a very complete team, just like you did last year, really. Yeah. So two very impressive years in a row here in the lead. I think the first year or two you were in the lead was it didn't go rough. As you hoped. Rough. And you've really come on as a strong powerhouse here these last 2 years. So well done. To you.
Thank you.
I would agree. Pete, you want to hop over to his matchup before we let him sign off?
Yep. So you have a matchup against Michael this week. And Michael, of course, has Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp, who both played tonight. And then he had DK Metcalf playing on the other side for the Seahawks as well. He got you know, pretty good performances across the board. He got a really good one out of Kupp, below expectations from Cooks, and then Metcalf caught that long touchdown pass and pretty much did nothing else, but that helped him hit expectations. So overall, Michael's a little bit ahead of projection after tonight's game, where you had Russell Wilson go off for 33.9 points, throwing four touchdown passes. So that's a great start to the week for you. And then, you know, the rest of their team, I feel like, is set up well this week. You know, we talked about Keenan Allen, and I think the Chargers continue to have injury issues there, even though it's a tough matchup against the Broncos and you know, getting shouted by Chris Harris most likely. I think Allen will still have a good week in that situation. Mike Evans is to go into New Orleans, where I think he has had success in years past. And, you know, he's coming off two really good games in a row. Now, Tyler Boyd has a probably good spot for a bounce back game against Arizona, with especially with John Ross being injured, should only send more targets to him. And then you've got Martez Valdes-Scantling, who certainly stands to benefit from a likely absence of Devontae Adams, and more targets his way. So I think your wide receiver is set up really well, and I really like the spot for David Johnson as well, going against Cincinnati, who just gave up like 50 running back points to the Steelers on Monday night. And, you know, David Johnson did a lot of work for Arizona there. So I don't know about Connor's status for this week. I know you've got him in the starting lineup right now. I don't think he's practiced yet through Thursday. So we'll see what happens there. But, I mean, the rest of your team is looking really solid. And certainly a 30-plus point week from your quarterback is a great way to put up a high score.
I would echo all of those things. And given that Brandon Cooks just didn't have a great game tonight, I would be a little bit more concerned that it was more of a push matchup projection or score-wise. But the Texans are playing Atlanta, and Atlanta's offense has been a little soft, and Texans' defense has been very, very strong. So I think that's a favorable matchup for him at the defensive spot. I got to say, his kicker, man, looks really good up in Jacksonville. So, I mean, as you say, that's a tough spot, but the Steelers are coming in hot after a big win just last week. Kyler Murray is up against the Cincinnati Bengals this week, and I think that's a challenging matchup for him. So I've got a lot more concern looking at the remainder of Fitz's teams than I do have confidence, with the exception of maybe his defense. So ultimately, I think that you look really, really good this week and are excited to enjoy a 4-1, sir.
We will see. We'll see what happens.
Notwithstanding the podcast curse, negative times two.
I'm hoping that some of the matchups, like you guys have alluded to, are enough in my favor that I can outrun the curse. Yeah, it certainly could still come into play, but some of the matchups just really are so good. The David Johnson matchup is so good. He's sure to break an ankle. And
yeah, as I say, really, the only thing that will stop you is injury. That's really the only thing that's going to stop you is someone.
Yeah,
we have said on this podcast before, and someone has gotten hurt.
Yeah, and someone has.
That is right.
Antonio Brown, second quarter, week 15. in the 2017 season. The only reason I lost to Brock, I remember it well.
sounds like you do. Sounds like you made that a little bit more therapy.
That was the four-man podcast. That one I will not soon forget.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I like Valdez-Scantling a lot. I went and looked for him last week and saw that you picked him up very well. Very good job. That was one of your draft picks, actually. And I am also hoping that Davante Adams does not play, mainly because I would be going up against him, and also because I have a start-sit decision to make around the same concept. So we shall see.
Yeah, I'm in reference to Connor and the fact that David Johnson's now due to break an ankle. I am truly looking for some running back help. I'm a little shallow at the position, so anyone is welcome to send me trade offers.
This is my platform.
I don't know if anyone is deep at running back, though. Honestly,
it's rough.
I think Brock is playing like half a running back, and that's all he's got. Like, with the bye weeks and the injuries and the timeshares, it's really hard to find reliable running backs outside, you know, the Christian McCaffreys and Ezekiel Elliott's and Alvin Kamara's of the world. So it's tough sledding for running backs out there.
It is.
New draft strategy next year: draft all the running backs and trade them away.
I feel like a couple people almost tried to implement that this year. I went looking through all the rosters this week, trying to find someone who would be a good fit. And you're right. There's a couple people out there who I feel like have some running back depth, but good for them. I don't think they want to give it up easily. I don't blame them.
Right. Yeah, because they're just waiting for their starters to get hurt. So,
yep.
That's the way it goes with running backs.
It is.
All right, Jared. Well, good luck to you, sir. Appreciate you being on the air this evening. Looking forward to watching what unfolds or breaks, I should say, if anything, this weekend for you. And genuinely don't wish that on anyone other than the opponent that I'm facing in a given week. So, and that's not you, but we shall see.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jared.
Do you think we got him?
No. He's too locked in.
I think so, too. I'll say this. If David Johnson does go down, we need to be more careful with our podcast.
Definitely going to pick up the handcuffs to David Johnson and James Conner if they're available.
Probably not a bad idea, just in case this thing is real.
The power.
It's worth hedging the bet, for sure. Well, hey, I'm excited to talk specifically about the Pellwood Bowl. So here we are once again, Andy Elwood up against Pete Elwood in the bone-breaking matchup of the week. You guys went in with a pretty even push of probability down the middle. Chris Carson managed to bring in a touchdown and have over 100 yards tonight, so he got a little leg up on you. But Tyler Lockett, as your third string wide, also hailed in a touchdown, so you're not too far out of the running. I wasn't expecting Andy to be more highly projected after the Thursday night football game than you are this evening. I don't read too much into that. But we shall see. He's got Tom Brady up against Washington this week. I think that's a strong pick. I don't know if that's going to top Jared Goff's bench points right now. Jared having a pretty decent game, nearly 400 yards, 18.9 points sitting on Andy's bench. You've got Lamar Jackson, who has been hot as things that are hot. And radio excellence right here.
Nicely put.
I'm a poet, and I think that he's ripe for a big week up against Pittsburgh, but they are playing there, and so maybe a little bit of a concern. Devonta Freeman, though, is going to be your stud of a stud this weekend. I predict that he will carry your team quite well up against Atlanta. And what else do I like on your team this week? I like anybody playing the Jets or the Giants, so that would include Alshon Jeffrey this week. Looks good. Yeah.
Yeah, we started out projected pretty evenly before tonight's game, and then he had a better night from Carson than I had from Lockett. Lockett had the early touchdown, and then Carson really came on strong in the second half, racked up a bunch of yards, and caught a touchdown pass. So that definitely hurt me, but Carson is a beast, and it's really fun to watch him play football. I got to watch more football than usual of tonight's game, and you know, he's just so good at avoiding tackles, breaking tackles, and getting those extra yards. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, how Marion Barber used to run for the Cowboys back in the day. It seemed like it was really hard to tackle him, and he kind of made the defense pay whenever they did tackle him. So I liked watching Carson play. I'm fine with being down by 6 points for the entertainment factor there. I think for me the key here is going to be Travis Kelce. Who, you know, I paid a ton of money for in the draft as the number one overall tight end. He has not been the number one overall tight end, but he's been very consistent. He's, you know, consistently put up like 15 points or something like that per game. I need him to have a bigger week this week. He's got one touchdown pass on the year. He's playing the Colts, who can be susceptible to tight end scoring. And then it's, you know, he'll be my last player of the week playing Sunday night. Andy's got Sammy Watkins going on Sunday night as well. You know, same team. So it might come down to which one of them has a better score, or, you know, catches the touchdown passes. And then Andy's got Odell Beckham playing Monday night. So that'll be, I'm sure I'll be biting some nails on Monday night watching Odell Beckham play, because I don't think this one will be decided before then. So we'll see. I think this will be a tough matchup, especially with Andy in the head start here on Thursday night. I tried to look back at lead history of prior matchups against Andy today, and of course ESPN doesn't show the schedules from prior lead years, so on my own records I was able to go back to 2016, and for the last 3 years I have been victorious over Andy, but and there was only 1 year I think that was particularly close, within 10 points, but this one definitely looks like it's going to be the closest of them all, and I can't say it's any better than 50-50 odds right now. So this will be a fun one to watch. I hope it is hope it comes down to the wire and stays close, because that'll be more fun and exciting for all.
I think it will, and I agree with you. I do think that you take it in the end.
Ooh, not sure. I feel like Odell is due for a bounce back. I don't know. At San Francisco, I don't think they have a great pass defense. So, and Cleveland looks like they've started to figure out their offense a little bit more last week at Baltimore. So maybe this week they did Odell Beckham going. I think I'm going to have a heartbreaking loss on Monday night here.
Oh, yikes. Well, it should be noted that Andy is one of the four teams that are sitting at 1-3 this weekend. And we know that 1-4 is a very, very challenging rank to come back from. And so he's, you know, playing with a little bit extra oomph this weekend too. So that's something worth considering.
Yep, you're right. And now we'll go and look at your matchup, which is against another one of those teams that is sitting at 1-3. And that's Ben, who has not got off to such a good start here on Thursday night, as his Rams defense put up -1 points in Seattle. I feel like he still had the Rams defense plugged in there from last week when they played Tampa Bay, which wasn't a great play, but it certainly looked like it would be a good play before the game. And the Thursday night game may have snuck up on Ben here, and he still had the Rams defense in there. So he's currently down on the projection from where he started. You're currently projected to be 12 points ahead of Ben. He does have a good matchup for his quarterback, Carson Wentz, at home against the Jets. Very susceptible pass defense there, and certainly a good spot for Wentz. Leonard Fournette and Le'Veon Bell both are doing a ton of work, pretty much 100% of the running back work in their backfields, which is great. Almost no matter what the matchup is, getting that volume is certainly a plus for the running backs. And then I also like he's at Tariq Cohen in the flex, who I wouldn't normally be too excited about, except that the Bears had to change quarterbacks because Trubisky got hurt, and their backup, Chase Daniel, has, I think, consistently fed Cohen whenever he's played with just lots of catches. So I think it'll be a good week for Cohen here. Outside of that, there's not a lot I love about Ben's team, and so I think he'll have a middle-of-the-road week. and really needs you to falter to take this one.
Yeah.
I owe you an apology though. Last week I specifically called out Mohamed Sanu as a player that you know, I thought you might look to upgrade at some point during the season, and Sanu went off last week, which is like a huge week. So I just, I'm sorry, and you're welcome for jinxing Sanu into 9 catches for 91 yards last week.
I will receive half of that. I'll let our listeners decide which half. This is a week that I really wish that we had that second flex spot, tell you the truth. I am between Shady and Jordan Howard and Sanu and my recently picked up Geronimo Allison, depending on whether or not DA plays this week. I wish I didn't have to split hairs on my start-sit decision. Even looking at Julian Edelman, not exactly sure. I feel like what I have is a lot of potential in each and every one of these, and I'm confident that one of these four is going to go off. Please tell me who. Fantasy gods, meet me in my dreams and tell me who.
I don't think you want me to, because whatever I say, the opposite's going to happen.
Yeah,
so,
it'll get in my head.
Or maybe you do want me to say so that you can do the opposite of what I tell you to do. Man, it's...
No, because then I won't trust your motive.
It's really hard to keep track of curses and,
I know,
and stuff.
I know.
What we're cursing and jinxing and what's real.
Seriously.
I do see you've got Jordan Howard plugged in there. So, you know, I think that's... I don't know if that's the right decision, but certainly an understandable decision after missing on his 3 touchdowns last week. Right. And congratulations to you for that, not coming back to bite you with a loss for that.
Well, defense may or may not win championships, but it certainly wins tight matchups, as I've seen now more than once, as the Pats have been not only my top performer on my team, but one of the top performers, if not the top performer of the entire league for the given week. So, yeah, squeezed one out.
Yeah, and like the Pats defense has been really good. They've also played,
the
Steelers.
Easy schedule, yeah.
Yeah, they've played the Steelers when Roethlisberger apparently had something hurt with him. They played the Dolphins. They played the Jets, who are missing their top two quarterbacks. They played Buffalo, and now they play Washington and the Giants and the Jets again. So, like, their dominance as a defense is not really going to stop anytime soon. So that, such a good ad, such a good schedule to start the season. You got them for $1 when we saw other defenses going for $3 and $2. So really smart pickup there. And I don't know if they'll be a lead winner, but if you make it all the way there, they play Cincinnati in week 15 and Buffalo in week 16. So that's a really good couple matchups to close out the season there as well.
I was truthfully confused that they were available when I was able to pick them up and really excited. I think that some of the anti-Tom Brady sentiment might have accidentally carried over into the team at large. But I am glad that they've been doing so well for me. And like I said, I'm very, very grateful to them because I've won more than one matchup as a result of them carrying me and outscoring literally my studs that I paid... a few of which paid, 50 or 60 times what I paid for the Pats. So that's a pretty good dollar per point ratio.
Yep. No, I had them in the top three of the defenses I wanted. Mm-hmm. But, you picked a defense earlier than I did. I wasn't going to bid $2 for one when there were other ones out there that I thought would be just fine.
Who's
so,
gonna do that?
Good pick, good move, and they have single-handedly won you 2 games so far this season. So.
I am aware.
Pretty impressive, and I think you're in good shape to do it again.
I think so, too. I'm picking myself for the win, but we shall see. But speaking of people my defense has beat up, let's hop over to Charles and his matchup with Brock this week as Charles looks to bounce back. He's now on a 2-game losing streak, and he is facing another 2-2 team. However, this week, he's looking pretty strong. Todd Gurley having run 2 touchdowns in, despite a fumble, brought in 18.7 points to get a leg up on Brock. Brock's team does not look good right now. I don't have much to say.
He's having some depth issues, and bye weeks and injuries are really... showing up with a strong effect on his team because of those depth issues. I mean, in his starting lineup right now, he's got Duke Johnson, who has not been as good as he was supposed to be after Lamar Miller went down for Houston. He's got Dawson Knox, who is an intriguing play at tight end. Not totally worthless there, but not really someone you would have thought you'd be starting at tight end a week or two ago. And Raheem Mostert for San Francisco at running back, who is, what, the third or fourth running back in the order there?
I don't know much about him at all.
To me, he's the guy you play if two other guys are hurt, and those guys might be healthy this week. So, you're right. This is a week where Brock still has Deshaun Watson, he still has Michael Thomas, he still has DeAndre Hopkins, and those guys need to go nuts for him to win, because Robert Woods did not. He only put up 10 points this week, so a big week from Woods certainly would have made this look a lot better for Brock. But right now, Charles is looking very strong. He got two touchdowns from Gurley tonight, and still Gurley only scored 18.7 points. So I think that's a little concerning that, Gurley put up, 6.7 points outside of touchdowns. You don't take the touchdowns away. Like, he still gets the touchdowns. That's the reason why he's so valuable. It's because he does a lot of goal line work and scores those touchdowns. But Gurley is just not the same kind of back that he's been for the last couple of years. And I think a lot of us felt that way during the draft. So very solid running back. He has not hit 100 yards rushing, or really 100 yards total yards this year. And there's only one game where he's caught more than three balls and more than 10 yards. So just different player than he has been for the past 2 or 3 years. So usable, but certainly not going to be the weak winner that he used to be.
Yeah, I agree. I'd be interested. I don't have it in front of me, but to look at his average yardage per carry. And compare that over the past couple of years too, because he just is not in the open field as he once was, as they use him for the goal line. Deshaun and DeAndre Hopkins are very likely to go off this week. I don't know if it will be enough for Brock. Poor old Michael Thomas and Brock, they've been in bed for a while together for quite some time, and Drew Brees' absence with the Saints has impacted their entire offense.
Yeah, that and they just don't throw the ball farther than 5 yards down the field with Bridgewater in there instead of Breeze. So, Thomas has had two solid games with Breeze out. Honestly, he's got he's had 16 points and 18 and a half points. So, really nothing to complain about. There his scoring average is about the same without Breeze as it was with Breeze, which is impressive, and I think shows how good of a player Thomas is. I do think the ceiling is capped there, and you're not as likely to see, him go for, 10 catches, 130 yards, and two touchdowns.
Right.
But I think you can keep putting up those 8-for-70 kind of games.
Yep. Well, my money is certainly on Charles this week.
He's at Zeke against Green Bay at home, and Green Bay just... we saw them give up 3 rushing touchdowns to Jordan Howard last time out, and their rushing defense has been gouged so far this year, and the Cowboys will be looking to run a lot. The Cowboys are going to be missing their left tackle, Tyron Smith, who does make a big impact, but I expect Zeke will have a very big day running against that Packers defense, and so I think that sets up really well for Charles. I think Mahomes is in a good spot, possible shootout against Indianapolis. Larry Fitzgerald against Cincinnati is a nice matchup, as well as Emmanuel Sanders against the Chargers. So I think there's a lot to like on Charles' side here, and I think this will be a good win for him, getting back in the saddle. He's certainly projected to a 40-point lead over Brock, and that sounds about right.
I agree. All right, well, let us hop over to the battle of the Chris's this week. We've got Chris Windsor up against Chris Chewy Clark. Both teams are sitting at 1-3, and neither of them have... that's not true. We watched Greg Zuerlein just miss the game-winning field goal this evening, so I'm sure that Greg is not sleeping well in this minute. But... Chewy's team has been struggling. His last 3 games have been nothing short of sad, and I don't dislike the recipe of some of his players, but he's just not getting the performance out of any of them that he needs.
So first on Chewy's side, You know, the best thing going for him has been Austin Eckler. That's, you know, has been his best player by far. Great draft choice. Got him for like $4, which is way too cheap. But now Melvin Gordon is coming back. And so now, instead of having one awesome player, that's kind of getting chopped, because now he's got Eckler and Melvin Gordon in his starting lineup. And, you know, the two of them aren't going to be greater than the one. So I think that is going to hurt Chewy, and, you know, he already wasn't in a great place. I do think Allen Robinson is in a good spot, and Joe Mixon's in a good spot for Chewy. You know, Dak and Amari at home versus Green Bay, they could go off if they, decide to throw it more than run it. We'll see. But I think overall, Windsor is in a better spot. I think I really like George Kittle this week. Stephon Diggs, big question mark there, because apparently he wants out of Minnesota, doesn't like how they're running the ball so much and not using him, which he's justified in that, and I hope he's traded. But Christian McCaffrey is the stud of all studs so far this season. But we have to talk about Chris Winter's quarterback situation.
Yep. What is happening?
Because it's absolutely ridiculous. He's getting, I think he got 3 points from a quarterback in week one. He got 10 points in week two. He got maybe 11 points in week three and negative half a point last week.
Amazing.
And I didn't go back and re-listen to the podcast a second time, but I'm pretty sure I questioned him starting Case Keenum on the podcast last week. And sure enough, Keenum was pulled after being bad. And that was the reason Chris lost. So this week, he is starting, currently in his lineup, Jacoby Brissett at quarterback at Kansas City. Fine play on paper. I don't like it.
It does make sense on paper. If you have to stream a quarterback, he's not a bad option if you're just looking at the week-to-week upside.
I would not start a quarterback in Kansas City. There are options available that are not a quarterback on a run-heavy team in a tough place to play. I'll just say that. I just don't start Jacoby Brissett. Like, you're going to lose if you start Jacoby.
His pass completion rate is abysmal.
I mean, he's thrown for touchdowns, so he's been good. He's got two or three touchdowns in every game. But if Windsor starts Jacoby Brissett and loses, he deserves it.
Okay. Well, maybe this will reverse jinx it.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm wrong, but I wouldn't start him. I wouldn't do it. I think you're just asking for more bad quarterback
play. Maybe so, but I don't think it's going to be enough to steal the Robin Mode win. Probably.
Yeah, he can probably rest easy. Wink, wink.
All right. Well, finally, without further ado, the only 4-0 manager who is not the number one ranked manager in the league is up against Scott Manoah, who is a cheeky 2-2. And this week, it's going to be hard to decide matchup-wise what the comparative factors are, because right now, we are not looking at a complete lineup over on Scott's side. But tell me what you like, Pete.
You know, Derek, I think, has been fortunate to be 4-0. He's got three wins. He's got two wins by less than 1 point. He's got another win by 4 points. Yeah. And then the other time he played Charles on Charles's worst week, and Charles only put up like 100 points. So he's fortunate to be 4-0. However, I do think his team is solid. He's, you know, kind of middle of the pack in points scored. I expect he'll kind of be middle of the pack in points scored again this week. I think his team is stronger than Stotts this week. You're right. It is hard to evaluate Stotts' team. But, you know, the quarterbacks on Stotts' roster, Mason Rudolph and Daniel Jones, I think they both have average to challenging matchups this week, and aren't going to be slam dunks. And then at wide receiver, he's got DJ Chark and Cole Beasley slotted in right now. Maybe T.Y. Hilton plays and that helps him. Maybe Matt Eichel plays and that helps him. But I'm not sure. He did get 13 points from Will Disley tonight, so that's a nice score from Disley, who was good last week, like I thought he would be, and another solid week this week. But I think running backs going to be tough for Scott. Chubb at San Francisco and Aaron Jones at Dallas, I think those are going to be difficult matchups for him. And I like Derek's side here a lot better. Josh Gordon's in a great spot. Julio Jones might be in a shootout. And then we got to monitor the health of Juju Smith-Schuster. He may not play, but I think there's got some options there. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Sterling Shepard for Derek, because Golden Tate is coming back this week and will likely cut into some of Shepard's targets overall. But I think Derek's in a good spot to get another win, even without an outstanding score.
Yeah, I think that's the situation in a nutshell. Even without an outstanding score, which he may, as you say, be in the higher top end of the middle of the pack, I don't think that will be threatened by Scott this week. Well, Pete, we are just now on the cusp, if you remember from league history past, where we start eyeballing the playoffs. We start kind of hinting at, it's kind of the winter is coming mentality, that they are just on the horizon. We can start to feel the tremors of the playoffs to come, and we start really hitting those records hard. After week five, we start to look at those 1-4 teams. Chances are only one of them will have a shot at the sixth spot of the team ranking going into the playoffs. So how are you feeling at the cusp of week five? Would you agree with me that the tremors are starting to just echo in the distance?
Yeah, so with playoffs, you know, I think where the standings are right now, we got to cheer for Squish Factor because you're right. We got four teams at 1-3. As we talked about them, I think we're at least thinking two of those are headed to 1-4. The other two have a shot to, move up to 2-3. We'll start to see some teams really separate in the standings. And it comes up fast. You know, the 13 weeks of the regular season goes by quick, and then, you know, week 14, the playoffs start. So I think it's certainly something that you got to be thinking about. I know I'm thinking about all the time when I'm looking at players and kind of their schedule for the next 3-4 weeks, because I know you've got to start, you got to win some games, make some hay over next 4 or 5 weeks if you want to make the playoffs. And then, once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. So you can plan for the playoffs as much as you want, but you got to get there first. Mm-hmm. And so we have definitely seen anything can happen, especially last year with the top two teams both getting knocked out and having to play in the third place game. So that could always happen any year.
Yeah. Yep. A real talk here. Let's talk about ESPN.
Yeah. ESPN is just, it continues to disappoint. Mm-hmm. Even today, as I was trying to look back at lead history of matchups against Andy in prior years and realizing that's not there. And it's kind of like, well, if the only reason we're staying with ESPN, and it's a predominant reason for it, is the lead history aspect of it, to be able to go back and see who's won in certain years and all that sort of stuff. That's one of the big reasons why we stay with ESPN. And it doesn't even do that well. Mm-hmm. Should we really stay with ESPN? And, I think there are newer platforms out there. Sleeper is one. That's a potential platform that we could look at moving to. I think it's got a newer, a more modern feel to it. But it's still kind of being developed and built up. They don't yet do auction drafting. I think they're still working on, where you can import your lead history from an ESPN-type platform. And so maybe we'll let those things kind of play out a little bit, let them work out their kinks, and then we make the move to something like that. Maybe not next year, or might be the year after that, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. But there's also those two guys at ESPN. I mean, they could just, like, they could make a lot of progress over the next 12 months.
Will it be forward progress, though? That's the question.
Yeah, so far everything's been backwards.
Absolutely.
It's harder to use, harder to find things that you used to always know where they were, features being taken away, and more difficult to read. Yeah, so less reliable app crashes on me more often this year than any other year. So we'll see. Oh, you're on notice, ESPN. You are on notice.
Which should mean something coming from the greatest fantasy football league in the world. And this is its podcast. He's Peter Ellard. I'm Seth Martin. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.